I'm Carmen Moore. I play Hannah Gruen on Nancy Drew.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the River Heights Buzz podcast. We're on episode 49 today, and we will be talking about book number 17, The Mystery of the Brass-Bound Trunk. We will have something special for you at the end of this episode, which you can probably already tell from the title and the description. Do you want to go ahead with that, Candace, and share?
Sure. We just, as we do here on the River Heights Buzz podcast, we do everything backwards. So we actually recorded what we're putting at the end of this episode first. And so we just had a lovely conversation with Carmen Moore, who you all may know as Hannah Gruen on the TV show.
That was like a fangirl moment, if I will say.
Yeah, yeah, it really was. I feel like I probably should have done a little more research on her before we spoke, but oh my gosh, she has been in quite a few things. A lot of CW stuff. You all might recognize her currently on the Flash TV show. So, you know, check her out. She mentions her social media at the end of the interview if you all want to give her a follow and keep up with her. But she was absolutely lovely, and I really enjoyed our conversation.
Me too. Never would I have thought that I would be talking to someone from the show, whether it's like the main cast or a recurring role actor. Yeah.
Which, honestly, if you think about season two, I think they might have considered her a main person on season two.
I think so.
And just recurring on season one and season three.
Yeah. But either way, it was so much fun talking to her.
It was.
So stay tuned for that, everybody.
It's a good one.
Oh, yeah.
Let's hear some listener comments. Let's hear some listener comments.
Before we get into the episode, I forgot to mention a comment from a couple weeks ago from the 2019 movie, The Hidden Staircase, from an Instagram comment from Sarah.Jane77. She put three clapping hands emojis and said, "It's a great movie. I own it too. Sophia Lillis is a awesome Nancy Drew with an orange heart, detective, and a magnifying glass."
Nice. I really enjoyed the movie. It was kind of like what I said before. I went into it with absolutely no expectations, just because I didn't spoil it for myself. I didn't read anything about it. I knew literally nothing about it, which I figure was something like that overall isn't like super loved by the fandom. I feel like it's best to go in kind of as like a blank slate. That way, in most cases, you won't be disappointed. And overall, I wasn't disappointed. I enjoyed it.
The description of the book. From the moment Nancy Drew boards an ocean liner leaving for New York, she becomes involved in a new and dangerous mystery. A man on the pier gestures to someone on board in the sign language of the deaf. "Beware of Nancy Drew and N.E., he signals. Who is N.E.? Can it be Nelda Detweiler, a young South African who shares a cabin with Nancy, Bess, and George? When Nancy learns that Nelda has been accused of stealing a diamond bracelet in South Africa, she wonders whether the girl is a thief or the innocent victim of a vicious plot." It says that it was first published January 1st, 1940, but with revisions and stuff, things can change.
You know when the revised version came out?
No.
Let me look real quick. I don't know if it'll say in my, because I read it electronically as I typically do. Makes it just a little bit easier for me. 1968.
Hey, Megan here. So the revision actually came out in 1976. You unfortunately can't go by the dates in your Nancy Drew books. The date that Candace found as being 1968 was probably just when her particular copy was digitalized. So yeah, the original text was 1940 and the revised text was 1976. Now this is one of the 8 Nancy Drew books that was given a completely different plot when it was revised. So here's a summary of the original text version, and you'll see that it's completely different than the summary that Alexa read. Nancy plans a trip to South America by boat, along with chums George and Bess. They have joined a tour being conducted by an exclusive girls' school. To Nancy's amazement, the mother of one of the students, Mrs. Jocelyn, protests Nancy's presence on the tour. Prior to the departure, Nancy learns that there are issues involving the Trenton Trunk Company, mostly concerning the quality of merchandise. The owner of the company, who is a friend of Carson Drew, asks Nancy to interfere in daughter Doris's life and relationship so she will marry the son of a former business partner. Nancy must solve several mysteries: who the mysterious red-haired young man could be, why Doris is so withdrawn, what is going on with the trunk company, why did Mrs. Jocelyn protest Nancy's presence, as well as aiding her daughter Nestrelda, and solve the mix-up with Nestrelda's and Nancy's identical, or are they, monogrammed Trenton trunks. That was a mouthful. So as you can see, the revised text that they will be going over in today's episode is pretty much nothing like the original text version. The original outline was done by Harriet Adams, daughter of the creator, and Mildred Wirt Benson wrote the book. And then Harriet Adams revised the book, or in this case, completely rewrote it, for the 1976 re-release.
I guess we'll just dive right in on this one. And I have not read these books in order, clearly. So I don't know off the top of my head, this is book number 17, is that right?
Yeah.
Is this the first time, to your knowledge, has Nancy ever been out of the country in a book up to this point?
I read them in order the first time around, but since we've been doing it out of order, I honestly don't remember.
Okay. In number 12, The Message in the Hollow Oak, Nancy does travel to Canada, but if you're just reading the revised text versions of the books, Nancy has not yet traveled outside of the U.S.
I wasn't sure off the top of my head, but either way, let's just go ahead and get started. So the book opens up with Nancy, Bess, and George essentially on like a cruise ship, sailing from Holland to New York City. This is one of the books that I wish the Nancy Drew book series had a little bit more continuity for, because it would be really nice to kind of know what they were doing that led them there, because we really don't have a lot of background information on why they were in Holland, what they were doing there, that kind of thing. So that would be kind of nice to know. But as you all are aware, the books are really kind of standalone. As far as the stories go, you can read one and then skip several and read another one, and it's not going to affect your knowledge of the world. So that has its good and bad, advantages and disadvantages to it. But that's just me personally. I'd like to know a little more background of what was going on before the book started. But either way, like you said, Nancy notices that there's someone that's doing sign language from the dock. And Nancy, you know, add this to the list of things that Nancy knows. She, at one point at least, knew the entire sign language alphabet, but has since forgotten it, probably not from using it very often, but she can still recognize her name. And so she notices this man signing her name, which is weird. And then she notices this other message, beware Nancy Drew and N.E. So Nancy's trying to determine if the man is signing to someone that's standing on the ship on just another level that she can't see. And this is me right here. She almost falls overboard.
She's so zoned in.
Yeah. So just laser focused on this one thought of trying to see if this person is signing to someone on the ship, which obviously he must be. If he stays in the ship. Nancy, head in the clouds, trying to figure out what's going on, but Bess saves her, luckily. So Nancy told Bess and George what she had seen, and of course they were concerned because, I mean, I think any normal person would be. It's not every day that you see someone talking about you in a language that they assume you don't know. So the girls decide that they're going to split up and take different decks to try to see if they can find anybody else that may be talking to someone else using sign language. Nancy stays put to see if she can figure out, you know, who that person was signing to on the dock as well. Nancy didn't find anybody, so she ended up going back to her cabin, and there's a random girl in there.
Not weird at all.
I would be nervous about. So this girl says that her name is Nelda Detweiler, and she's the niece of the ship's captain, and she's from South Africa. She tells Nancy that she's going to the United States to go to college. And Nancy, of course, you know, light bulbs are going off in her head, and she's wondering if this girl may be a spy or have some kind of ulterior motives. And if the NE that the person on the dock was signaling about could be about this girl. Bess and George come back and they meet Nelda as well. And then the cabin steward comes in and his name is Henrik. The girls get their luggage brought to their cabin including a brass-bound trunk with the initials ND on it, but it doesn't belong to Nancy or Nelda. So at first I'm thinking, okay, is there a third ND?
And I thought there could be potentially four of them.
Yeah. Like, is there another one on this trip? So Nancy tried to find the porter who brought the luggage up but couldn't, and then heard shouting from someone saying that their trunk was gone, was brought to the wrong cabin, and was like freaking out about it. And so Nancy tries to find the people talking, but they're gone. So Nancy heads back to the cabin and she tells the girls about what she heard. But the trunk is really suspicious. It doesn't have any tags or stickers on it other than the ND initials on it. To me, that's a red flag. Like, if I saw something, whether it be a trunk or a package or something of that nature that has absolutely nothing on it, the last thing I want to do is open it. Like, I've watched far too many episodes of Unsolved Mysteries to know that you're really risking it, opening something that you're not familiar with.
I thought of, with Henrik being the steward, imagine if his last name was Vanderhoen.
Now, when I read Henrik, I immediately thought of Secret of the Scarlet Hand. But at least in my version, the name was spelled differently. But that was my first thought too.
And another thing I thought of was, when Nancy, Bess, and George were looking for, like, the mystery man doing the sign language, did Nancy tell them what he looked like?
No, I don't think she did.
Okay, so then how would Bess and George know what the guy looked like?
That's a good question. I think she was just basing it off of hoping that whoever was doing it had someone with them that was also fluent in sign language, and she would just look for someone signing, I guess.
I guess so.
But that's a good point. Yeah, she didn't say any descriptors as far as what the person looked like.
And even in the room, when the four girls were staying, I'm like, I don't even know how many beds would be in a state room, is what they call it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I didn't think that there would be four beds in there, but it could be, like, two queen-sized beds.
That's what I was thinking, that two girls shared a bed.
So Bess and George, I could see that because they're cousins. But Nancy and Nelda, if they shared a bed?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I would be too excited to share a bed with someone that I just met. But, you know.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what I thought because, yeah, I don't think those rooms would be near big enough for beds.
Or, like, unless they did, like, bunk beds.
Yeah, but I can't even imagine that either, because I feel like that could be a liability, because what if you hit a wave?
That's true. Unless they were, like, bolted to the wall.
Yeah.
With, like, the support that you wouldn't be able to fall down.
Yeah.
You know, like, what they have for kids.
Mm-hmm. I would need that.
Yeah.
But that's just me. Nancy, she goes to try to find the purser, who is, like, the person that, like, oversees all of the luggage coming on board and being brought to the owners, and the luggage then being taken off once the trip is done. So she doesn't find the official purser, but she finds his assistant, and she kind of explains to him what's going on, and he's looking in the system to try to find her trunk, but he can't seem to find any record of her trunk being brought on board, which obviously is nerve-wracking because all of her clothes are in it. Like, that's probably my worst travel fear, is losing my luggage. So that's why I always try. This is just me, life hack for everybody. Wisdom with Candace. I try to pack an extra bag that has, like, a couple pairs of underwear, an extra pair of socks, a thinner outfit that you can pack down small, and then maybe, like, a jacket that you can, like, maybe tie around your waist or something like that. I feel like it's always good to have an extra outfit just because life happens, things happen, you spill stuff on yourself, you lose luggage sometimes. Like, it's always good to have an extra option just in case.
And that was Wisdom with Candace.
Nancy's in a bit of a pickle here. If they can't find her luggage, then she's going to have to be borrowing clothes from these other girls or just wearing the same thing over and over again.
But luckily, it's like what we've seen in other books, like Bess and George are willing to share their clothes with Nancy.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is always really nice. Yeah. So Nancy also asks the assistant if there are any deaf people on board, and the assistant isn't sure. And we find out that his name is Rod, and he's going to go and speak with his boss to find out it, because they keep a list of people that have physical disabilities. And here's where the alarm bells go off in my head. And this is just because I work in a law office, but I feel like your average person is going to know this. This really dates this book, I think, because that is health protected information. That is HIPAA information that you cannot legally disclose to just a random person asking, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which obviously that kind of thing didn't exist back then. So it's understandable. But in today's world, you can't give that kind of information out legally.
I didn't think so.
No, can't do that. So Nancy finishes her conversation with Rod and she heads back to the cabin. And of course, the girls are more than happy to share clothes with Nancy, including Nelda, who has this costume that's like a traditional dress, like dress up kind of, not necessarily formal, but just a dressier kind of outfit from South Africa, where she's from, which made me confused because my understanding, and I don't know a lot about South Africa, so if I am wrong, listeners, please correct me, but my understanding of South Africa is that it's a nation that is owned by Britain. And so that's why most people that are from South Africa have British accents. And I don't think they have any like ceremonial kind of outfits or anything like that. Like, not to my knowledge. So if I'm wrong, please correct me, show me pictures, send me links, whatever. But my understanding is that's not quite accurate. So I was kind of confused by that part, but I was willing to look past it because, you know, it's a book.
I can someone that I work with, she's actually from South Africa, so I could probably ask her some of this stuff.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
I could be totally wrong. And if I am, please tell me, because I love to learn new things, but my understanding is that's not really a thing. Yeah. So please educate me. But so the girls have a good time with that. And then someone knocks on the cabin door and the girls look, but no one is there, but they find an envelope on the floor. And to me, I'm like, all right, this is really giving me Message in a Haunted Mansion vibes. Leave the mansion now. Like, I feel like if you find like a random letter like that on the ground, like it's going to be not something you want to read. So it's addressed to Nelda, and of course she reads it and gets upset, and she's really worried that she's being followed. And she tells the girls that she has this terrible secret, and at first she's not going to tell anybody, but I think she realizes how good of people Nancy, Bess, and George are. So she goes ahead and she explains what happened. And so basically she was in this jewelry store in Johannesburg in South Africa, and she saw this man that was stealing jewels, and she tried to stop him, but he got away. So she came back to the store to talk to the worker there and explain what had happened. And then the worker was convinced that Nelda was the one that actually tried to steal something. So they searched her and they found a diamond bracelet in her pocket.
Not good.
No, looks really suspicious.
Yeah.
However, even at this point in the book, I was trusting this girl. I was like, this, we don't have all the information. This isn't right. So, of course, she was very upset about this. And, you know, as she's telling Nancy about this, Nancy, of course, believes that the worker's in on it and did this to divert suspicion from this random person that ran away, kind of Nelda in the hot seat, so to speak, to get all the attention on her. Nelda, of course, is upset, but she had her family help her and they got a lawyer and they got it all straightened out and there were no charges that were pressed. But then Nelda got a threatening letter to turn over all of her family's jewelry or that she would be harmed.
Oh, gosh.
So her father, of course, finds out and he contacts the local police, but these threats are still coming in. And her family decides kind of as a group that she should get away for a while. So that's what drove her to apply to a school in America and come to America for college. Sad story, but, you know, I understand trying to get away. Sounds like someone aboard the ship is either one, the thief himself, or possibly an associate, like if he's working in a larger group. So the girls decide that they need to search the entire ship, which sounds like a pretty tall order to do. But then they realize that it's dinner time and they're supposed to sit at the captain's table because Nelda is the captain's niece. And so they don't want to miss that. So they get ready for that. And Nelda is like scanning everyone the whole time, trying to figure out if she recognizes anybody. The other girls are paying attention as well, too, to see if they maybe see someone who's speaking sign language, but nothing really comes of it. So the girls afterwards were then invited to the captain's quarters where he stays on the ship, and they kind of fill him in on everything that's going on and about how Nancy's trunk is missing. So the captain says that he's going to try to find the owner of the mysterious trunk, but if that person doesn't come forward by the next day, then he's going to have the ship locksmith come in and unlock it for the girls. So the girls decide then to make their way back to the cabin, but they go for a walk on the promenade deck first, and they meet another group of girls that are kind of their age, and they chat and make friends. And then all of a sudden, one of them sees this really bright object in the sky, and Nelda thinks that it's a meteor, and that it's going to hit the ship and, you know, they're all going to be hurt. That was the weirdest part of this book for me. What? A meteor? Like,
so random.
Yeah, it's really random. But, you know, whatever. Okay. Whether it was a meteor or whatever, it ended up hitting the ocean instead, but it caused this gigantic wave that almost took over the ship. Like, to me, that's even scarier than seeing something fall out of the sky. I personally have never been on a cruise. I don't know if I could ever do it just because, like, I don't know how to swim personally in real life. Being out in the middle of open water like that is somewhat terrifying to me, especially if it was, like, bad weather and the water is really churning and stuff, and I am terrified that I would be seasick. Overall, it just does not sound like a good time to me. So reading that whole section was like, oh, God. Sounds horrible. So, and of course, this was a dangerous situation. So the girls were pretty much okay, but there were some people that were injured and had to be taken down to the infirmary on the ship. And so the next morning, all is kind of calmed down. The locksmith comes and he struggles for a while trying to unlock the trunk, but he's finally able to make a key that matches the lock, and he opens it up. And there's men's clothing in it.
Like costume.
Yeah. So Nancy very quickly thanks the locksmith and kicks him out. Because she's got things to do. She's got some sleuthing to do. But then the next thing they know, the stewardess comes up, Henrik, and he sees the men's clothing and is confused. And then George quickly escorts him out. And Nancy says that she wants the captain to be aware of what's in the trunk. And it was kind of a mixture of like nice clothing and some things that were kind of worn out, and there were like wigs, and it was very clearly stuff that could be used as like a disguise. So, the man who was throwing a fit about his trunk being brought to the wrong room never followed up about it. Which seems odd, makes me think that there's something to hide. And then Henrik shows up again out of the blue and says that the assistant purser needs to see Nancy at once. Nancy worries for a second that it's a hoax and that she's just trying to be taken away from the room so that whoever owns the trunk can either get the stuff out of it or take it or whatever. But the captain then got a call that he was needed on the bridge on the ship, and so he goes for that. And then, like I said, Nancy thinks that it's all a ruse to get them out of the room. So Nelda and Bess decide that they're going to stay behind in the cabin to make sure nothing happens to the trunk. And so Nancy hides the trunk and the key and then goes to the purser's office. And she actually was needed by him, so it wasn't all a ruse, which is good. So she finds out that during the whole scenario where the meteor came and hit the ocean, and that big wave was created, some of the bags in the holding area were dislodged and hers might have been found. So she needs to go down there and actually identify it and see if it's actually made its way onto the ship. So Nancy and George go down there and they're let in by a worker, but then all of a sudden the ship kind of lurches and they all fall and get pinned by luggage and the lights went out. Again, sounds terrifying.
Yeah.
Don't want to be involved. Nancy's able to get up and she rings a bell for help. And the man that let them in was pinned underneath a really heavy crate and was hurt. But they're able to get the crate off of him and he's able to walk, but said that his head hurt. But luckily he didn't break any bones or anything like that. And so they were hollering for George and she wasn't answering. So they found her and she didn't have anything on her, but she was very clearly unconscious. And so that's really unnerving because you don't, it's not like, you know, she got hit by something.
Yeah.
You don't know really what happened. So they call for a doctor and all the stress kind of just like overcomes Nancy and she ends up passing out. I feel like that's a pretty normal stress response.
Yeah.
To a situation like this. So she later wakes up in the infirmary and asks immediately about George. And, you know, we find out George is awake and she's okay, but she has to stay and rest for at least 24 hours. So Nancy calls Bess and Nelda and Bess, you know, answers in a panic and says that she needs to hurry back to the cabin because two men came in to rob the room. And then she said Henrik had brought two men that claimed to be plumbers to fix the shower, but it was confusing because there was nothing wrong with their shower. And one of the men apparently noticed the trunk and tried to grab it, saying that it had to go to the holding area, but the girls wouldn't let him take it. And they were really proud of the fact that they wouldn't let him take it.
And it's like, at this point, for me, it seemed like Henrik was like fishy.
Mm-hmm.
And like throughout, for most of the book too, I felt like that. It's like, could he be in on this the whole thing?
Yeah, I didn't trust him at this point.
No.
So Nancy called the assistant purser, Rod, and he came down and she told him everything that had happened. And he said that no one in the maintenance crew matched the description of the plumbers, but that he was going to look into it for them. Nancy then shows him the trunk and the stuff that's inside it. And he thinks that the trunk should not be taken to the hold because that's what they were originally going to do since it wasn't hers. So he decides that what they're going to do is use the empty cabin room next to Nancy's room because it was originally rented out, but then the people ended up not making it to the ship on time. So it was empty. So they decided not to tell anybody and just hide it in there, which makes perfect sense because the rooms are conjoined rooms. So once they unlock those doors, they can easily move from room to room.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Rod says that he will get Nancy her real trunk in the early morning hours when most of the other people on board are asleep. So that night, the girls are kind of discussing what's going on because things are kind of crazy. And it's at this point that Nelda brings up if Henrik is completely innocent because, like you said, he's done some shady stuff. He's not seeming like he's too innocent.
No.
So Rod then shows up and has keys for the next room and they decide to hide them in a drawer in the back wall of their wardrobe so that no one knows that they have them. And then Nancy and Rod go to get her trunk in the holding area and Nancy sees a rat. Gross, but it's dead. Thank God. Nancy and Rod make it back to the cabin with her trunk and Bess then realizes that Nelda has disappeared. So Bess is me in this situation. She had fallen asleep.
Poor Bess. She,
that's me always falling asleep, but she heard a noise and it woke her up. It startled her. So she turned on a light and she realized that Nelda was gone. So Nancy said, well, you know, we'll get the key for the next cabin and we'll go over there. But she goes to look for the keys and they're gone. So they end up discovering that the doors are unlocked and they find Nelda in the bed in that extra room that's empty. And basically what had happened was, I guess Bess is just a super heavy sleeper and didn't realize that Nelda had gotten a threatening phone call saying that she would be thrown overboard. And so Nelda, of course, was scared and thought the best thing to do would be to run. But then she remembered the cabin next door. So she went in there to hide and she bolted it shut from the inside. I mean, you know, these threats and stuff. I mean, it's getting dangerous and we're still in the early parts here.
I found it interesting that Nelda was actually worried about getting thrown overboard. And then what happens later? She gets thrown overboard.
Foreshadowing. Rod tells her, you know, don't go anywhere by yourself. It's clearly not safe. There's something weird going on. So they hide the mysterious trunk in the empty cabin and lock it. And then Nancy's trunk, they put in the place under the bed where the mysterious trunk was at first. The girls wake up the next day. Everything is normal. They leave the room and go to breakfast and they come back to their cabin and Henrik is in there tidying their room and staring at Nancy's trunk. And I'm like, all right, you're not helping your case here, bud. Like, this is super suspicious. I don't like this.
Get the F out of here.
Yeah. So then at that point, the locksmith came back and showed the girls a master lock that he had bought while they were in Holland. And the girls were interested in it, but Nancy noticed that he kept looking at the trunk under the bed. That's also suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, the girls go and visit George in the infirmary and they get her up to speed on everything that's happened. And they find out that she's going to be released that evening. So in the meantime, the other girls decide that they're going to go have some fun. So they go out to one of the upper decks and they start doing shuffleboard. And then Nancy happens to look around and she sees this man practicing sign language. Seems weird.
Yeah.
So Nancy watches him and she tries to decipher what he's talking about. And she thinks that he's talking about jewelry. Nancy, ballsy as ever, just goes up to him and asks him if he was deaf. Because she figures, A, he's either not deaf, or B, hopefully he can read my lips and just sign to me if he is deaf. Not quite how I would have handled it, but okay. So he said that no, he's not deaf, but his father was, and he was learning the language so that he could speak with him. But then he quickly took off, like ran away. Okay. Super suspicious. So Nancy follows him and he stops like right outside of her cabin and Henrik is there and this man gives Henrik money. I'm like, all right,
what to do?
I mean, it's just going from bad to worse. Like,
it reminds me of like that one. I saw this one video on Instagram through TikTok, and I'd be like, you know, like that really squeaky voice, like, hey, what are you doing? Have you seen that one?
Yeah.
Like that really weird voice.
Yeah. I mean, that's
kind of like
it. Super, super sketch. So Nancy, you know, like I said, ballsy as ever, goes right up to Henrik and says, what's going on? Did that man just like give you money or, you know, what's the scenario here? So Henrik has this story saying that the person is named Mr. August and that he was a person that was on a prior trip and that he was paying Henrik back for candy that Henrik had picked up for him. Okay, whatever you say, Henrik. So Nancy looked on the cabin directory and found that there was a man named Mr. August and his first name was Otto. And so she went to the assistant purser to ask where he stayed, like what cabin he was in, but Rod wouldn't tell her because it was against policy, which in my head made me think again, okay, so you're going to tell her who on the ship has a physical disability, but you're not going to tell them room numbers. Like, that doesn't make any sense, but okay. Despite the fact that he says he can't tell her outright what room it is, he instead tells her to follow him and he discreetly shows her what cabin it is. So it's like a loophole.
Yeah.
So Nancy then goes to find the girls and they decide that they're going to go swimming and enjoy some of the other activities on the ship. And so as they're changing in their room, she kind of fills them in on what she's discovered so far. And then the girls make it down to the pool and they meet a group of guys that are probably around their age. And they decide to do races in the water. and that other group of girls that they met prior are also there. So they're all kind of hanging out. Nancy's having fun, and then all of a sudden she notices that Otto is there, and he overheard the other girls asking Nancy about her swimsuit. So now he's kind of put two and two together that she's got her trunk. So it's like, ooh, is this a good thing or a bad thing? So Nancy kind of wondered if at this point it would stop people trying to get into their cabin or if it would make things worse. So after a while, the girls decide that they're going to go back to their cabin. And then George calls from the infirmary and she wants her costume that she was working on, which that was something she had discussed earlier. She was making... She was making like a long like nightgown that she wanted to sew mice on for like a masquerade costume party kind of contest. And so she was, I assume, bored in the infirmary and wanted to work on the costume. And so later on that evening, she actually shows up at the cabin and she's back to normal. Everything is fine. So Nancy again tells her kind of what happened since they had last spoken, and the girls are getting ready for that party. And George ends up winning a prize for her costume. Rod, the assistant purser, then comes up to Nancy and asks to dance with her. And so they dance, and she finds out that the dance actually ends at 11 o'clock. And so at the end of the dance, Rod ended up going back with the girls to help them investigate the trunk. And Nancy soon discovers that it has like a false bottom in it where stuff can be hidden. And then as they're looking through that, Nancy is then convinced that she hears someone in the hallway. So they go and look, but no one's there. I'm sure someone was actually there.
Yeah.
You know how that goes. So they call the captain to come look at the trunk, and he wants to get the locksmith back to open this secret tray that Nancy had found. And the captain says that they can trust Lou, the locksmith, that he's known him for a long time and he's very trustworthy. So they get the locksmith out of bed, and he struggles for a lot longer trying to open this like tray. And he finally gets it open, and they find jewels.
Of course.
Of course. So the captain and Rod then take the jewels to be hidden in the captain's safe in his quarters. And then the girls don't think much else about it, and they go to bed. But then they end up getting a phone call that Rod and the captain were attacked in the hallway. And he wanted to make sure that the girls were okay and that the room was locked from the inside. Thankfully the men were okay and the jewels were okay as well. And so Nancy then, of course, curiosity killed the cat, gets up the next morning and checks out the area. She ends up finding a drawing of a diamond bracelet and a scrap of black material on the floor. So she brings it back to the cabin to examine it further, and she realizes that the piece of paper has the word Longstreet written on it. So she decides to ask the captain about it, and she tells Rod about it as well. And Rod thinks that the cloth could have come from the mask that one of the people was wearing that jumped them when he pulled it down on them. And it actually made the men fall down the stairs. So that's kind of how they got away.
Yeah.
So Nancy, after finding out all this information, returns to their cabin and tells the girls what's going on. And then they all decide that they're going to go and enjoy some more of what the ship has to offer by playing ping pong. So they finish their game after a while. And Nancy and Nelda went to go and see the captain. And Nancy shows him what she found in the stairwell. And he ends up telling her that Longstreet is the name of a famous jewelry like shop in England. And that there was actually a robbery at one of their shops in London. So now we're kind of putting things together, figuring it out. After learning all this information, Nancy decides that she is going to take a closer look at the trunk, and the captain ends up giving her a toolkit, which is very handy.
Nancy and Nelda decide that they're going to go and find Bess and George, who are still off playing ping pong, which that leads me to a question for you, Alexa. Have you ever played ping pong? And if you have, are you any good?
I have played ping pong before, but it's been a while. And I don't really know if I would be good. it's more like a for fun kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you?
I mean, yeah, I've played before. I'm not very good. When it comes to games like that, I prefer, like, air hockey.
Yeah.
Or, like, playing pool, stuff like that. Ping pong, I feel like I'm not very coordinated when it comes to that. So, yeah, no, I'm not very good.
Honestly, I'd rather do it just for fun. I don't want to have, like, any rules involved or anything.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, I don't even know if I know all the rules.
I know. Me too. So...
I wouldn't be winning any contests anytime soon. Let's just put it that way. So the girls decide after Bess and George finish playing that they are going to continue looking through the rest of the trunk later that evening. So the girls go for a walk and they see this little boy and they play with him for a while. And I feel like seeing this little boy like out by himself is another reference to when this was rewritten, because like in my head I picture this kid being probably like 5 or 6. I wouldn't let my 5 or 6 year old go off by themselves on a boat.
No.
You know what I mean? Like I don't know, because people are weird and it's a really weird world that we live in, and I just wouldn't let my little kid just run around.
And, like, yeah, like, the biggest question was, like, throughout this whole book are, like, where are this kid's parents?
Yeah, because there's no mention of his parents in any part of the book.
No.
So, you know, different time. And then he was wearing a mask, and George gets him to take it off, and she noticed that it was missing, like, a piece of the fabric. And he said that he had found it on the deck, and he thought that the wind had blown it there. The little boy says that his name is Bobby, and he, I got tickled at this part. He made George pay 25 cents for the mask and then took off.
Oh gosh. Of course.
So I had a hard time trying to, find like a conversion for change from that, the time that this book was rewritten to now, because it's usually like just dollar amounts. But from what I can gather, 25 cents then in today's money would be about like $2.50. So, you know, not going to get a whole lot with that, but I'm sure 25 cents to a little kid back then was probably a whole lot of money. So, but yeah. I got really tickled at that. So Nancy then tells Rod about what had happened. The robes that the men were wearing when he and the captain were attacked. So when Rod and the captain were like jumped, quote unquote, the people that did it to them were wearing those masks and like these robes. And so after the attack had happened and they fought the men off, they eventually found the robes that the men were wearing on the second deck. And Rod had searched the pockets at that time and didn't find anything in them.
My question is that how would they, like, are all the robes the same color or are they different colors?
I guess they're the same color, like, because when I'm picturing it in my head, they're just, like, your standard kind of, like, bathrobe. So nothing, like, super fancy. I assume they were probably dark in color, probably knee length, if I had to guess. I mean, I don't know.
So if all the robes were, like, that, you know, like the darker color, how would they know those were the robes that were used?
No, I mean, that's true. That's true. But I would assume if they are robes that came from the ship itself, I would assume they would all look exactly the same. But that, yeah. No, that is a good point. Like if every single room has them, how do you know?
Yeah.
Good point. So despite Nancy wanting to immediately get back to work again, because we all know how she is, she's a workaholic, the other girls decide that they want to go out and tan, which, I mean, I get, like, you know, I figure, I've never been on a cruise, but I figure that, like, if you're going on vacation and you're taking a cruise, that's probably, like, the definition of a relaxing vacation, because, like, for me, vacations are like never relaxing. Like when I get back from a vacation, I need a vacation for my vacation because we're usually just like go, 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 like really regimented and like the plans that we have. And we never really like fly by the seat of our pants when we go on vacation. So I assume that like, if you go on a cruise, you're going to do a lot of that kind of thing. Laying around, playing games, walking around on the different decks, you know, things like that. So the girl had to be super girly and go tanning, which I mean, I get like you're in the middle of the ocean. That's going to be like the perfect with the sun and everything. It's going to be the perfect place to tan.
And Nancy is like, obviously Nancy wants to keep like solving this stuff, but at the same time, she's got to think she's not by herself. She has like three other people with her. So she has to take into consideration that they may want to do other things too, not just be a part of the mystery.
True. And not only that, clearly it's not a good idea to go and do anything by yourself.
Especially when they mentioned earlier in the book, oh, let's go in pairs.
Yeah.
So
three against one, Nancy decides to go with them. So the girls all fall asleep, which to me is a horrible idea because that's like asking for a sunburn.
Yeah.
But the girls fall asleep and then Nancy decided to get up and she started walking around and she saw a couple of men talking and thought that one of them looked like Otto August. So she looked closer, but then she realized that the men were actually asleep. So Nancy checked a weather chart and saw that the weather was the same as the previous day. So she thought that the men probably got rid of the masks that they were wearing after they jumped the captain and Rod and threw them like from an upper deck, not realizing that the wind would move them to a lower deck, which, I mean, if you think about it, like, why do you think throwing would be a good idea? Because, I mean, I don't know how fast cruise ships go, but I assume in open ocean like that, there's going to be wind.
Yeah.
Like, did they not take that into consideration?
Apparently not.
I guess not. So Nancy decided to go find Rod to see if she could get some table napkins from him for an experiment. She wanted to try to see if she could recreate throwing napkins from the upper deck to see if they would land on the deck where the mask and the robes were found. Makes sense. So Nancy ended up going to get the napkins from the dining area and she went back to the girls, but they were still asleep. Me.
Sunburned city.
I'm telling you. But the men were not, and they were actually like sitting up signing to each other in American Sign Language. And Nancy realized that one of them had just signed the name Drew to the other one.
Yeah.
Okay. Super suspicious. So Nancy, of course, is watching and she seems to figure out that the men are talking about something about jewelry and how a crew could help find a necklace. So not a whole lot to go on, but something. So Nancy decides that she's going to go get the other girls and she fills them in on what she saw. And so the girls did an experiment with the napkins and lo and behold, it all worked out, landed exactly where Bobby said that he found the mask. So at this point, the girls decide to head back to their room. And as soon as they get there, they realize that it's been ransacked. Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
So, of course, they're nervous. And they go and check the other cabin, but the other trunk is still there. So that's good. So Nancy then calls the captain. She tells him what happened, but or attempts to try to tell him what happened, but he wasn't there. A junior captain ends up sending Rod and the girls fill him in on what happened. And of course he's concerned and worried and they ask him to help search for more things in the trunk. And they think that there could be something hidden in the lid. So while they're doing that, Nelda, Bess, and George go back over to the main cabin and they start tidying it all up while Nancy and Rod are looking at the other trunk. So, and this is like, when I'm reading this part, this sounds like really tough work because the way that they're describing it is like this trunk has a lining which I assume is like paper, so it's thin. And so she's like peeling it back, but trying to not damage it, like trying not to rip it. And so she finally is able to peel it back and finds these papers that are hidden in the lid of the trunk. And so she talks to Nelda about it, and Nelda realizes that they are government documents about a newly discovered diamond mine in South Africa. Documents that I assume are probably sensitive documents, you know, not like public information.
Like, throughout this whole time, it's just like every time they decide to look into the trunk, they find something.
Yeah. So, makes me wonder how much that trunk was, or if it was just a regular trunk that was then like worked on to have these secret compartments in it.
Yeah.
I don't know. But Nancy decides that she wants the papers to be put in the captain's safe just for safekeeping, which is a good idea. And so Rod escorts her there so she gets there safely. And then they fill the captain in on everything that's happened thus far. The next day, Nancy decides she's going to go for a walk where she saw Otto and the other man. And she decided to look around where they were sitting. And she found a piece of paper with sign language on it. My problem with that is it's been a day. How often do they clean this area? You would think if it was just a piece of paper on the ground, somebody would have thrown it away. Yeah. Or something else would have happened to it.
Or blown away.
Yeah. Like, but yeah. Okay. I can go with it. So Nancy decided to go back to the cabin, but the girls were gone. So she went back to the deck where she had seen the men, and the person cleaning up the area gave her a New York Times newspaper that was there that was a week old. And so Nancy took it back to the cabin to review it and found sections out of it that were missing. So she then went to the ship's librarian to see if the ship had a copy of that newspaper, but they didn't. Some random passenger overheard Nancy asking for the newspaper and apparently just had a copy of it. And so they gave it to Nancy. And the part of the newspaper that was missing was an advertisement for a company in New York that was buying precious, flawless stones in or out of settings.
And that kind of gets Nancy thinking, like, okay, Otto's, you know, working ahead of this. And
yeah,
there's something else that's going to happen.
Yeah, he has the goods, but now he's got to figure out how to get rid of it and not get caught.
Yeah.
So Nancy tells Rod what she found out, and she asks if there was anyone working on the ship named Dan, because that was what was written on the piece of paper that Nancy found in the area that the men were sitting in. So he says he's going to look into it for her. And so she decides to leave to head back to the cabin. But as she's walking down the hallway, she sees a weird looking man in the hallway. And as soon as this guy realized she was there, he took off. So, you know, Nancy, doing the crazy thing, decides to run after him.
By herself.
Yeah, by herself. Horrible idea. Don't recommend. But he took off. She couldn't catch him. So Nancy went back to the cabin and she found a note from Bess that the girls had gone to watch George because she was going to compete in a ping pong tournament. Which sounds fun. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it sounds like a really nice way to pass time. And of course it's George because she's always depicted as sporty. But Nancy needed to go see the locksmith from before first because he apparently wanted to show her something. And then she was going to go and meet the girls and watch the rest of the tournament. So she goes to see the locksmith, Lou. And he tells her about how someone earlier had needed a briefcase to be open that had the same type of lock as the mysterious trunk. And he didn't know the name of the person who asked for it. But as he was working on the briefcase, he saw the initials OA, Otto August. Yeah. Things are slowly starting to fall together at this point. So Nancy, of course, asks if he can remember like any features of this guy. And the way that he describes the guy was not actually like what Otto looks like, but the guy that he was with. Okay, so we're getting somewhere. So the man had talked to him about like the weather, how fast the ship was going, you know, that kind of thing, just pleasantries, I guess. And Lou reminds Nancy, you know, we're docking in New York in literally 2 days. So Nancy, gears start turning. We got to hurry and figure this out before these guys get away with all these jewels and try to sell them.
And it almost seemed like Nancy kind of lost track of time, which usually happens when she solves a mystery.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Which also, though, I feel like if you're on a cruise for like an extended amount of days, I feel like it would be really easy to lose track of time. Especially if you don't have like a set schedule of things that you're doing, and you're kind of just going with the flow and relaxing and whatever, you can easily lose track of time. So yeah, it makes sense. Nancy talked to Rod about what she had learned from Lou, the locksmith, and asked if he would take her down to the hold area where the luggage was at when he's off duty. And so the guy from earlier was down there and he was recovering because remember he had that really big crate on him. And I think he had like some hurt ribs or something, but he's doing better. And he told them that no one had ever followed up about the mystery trunk. Suspicious. So Rod told her that he did find out that there was a man named Dan working on the ship, but he apparently had a good reputation. So I guess that didn't pan out, but Rod decided that he was going to meet Nancy at 2 a.m. to move the mystery trunk down to the hold so that they can attempt to catch Otto when the ship disembarks. So they have this whole big elaborate plan of what's going on. So Nancy goes and tells the captain her thoughts, and she tells him how she thinks that they should have authorities there waiting when they get to New York. And she told the captain when he speaks to the authorities to mention that the gang uses sign language, because I mean, that could be a really easy way to pick these people out of a crowd if you see random people doing sign language, considering no one else apparently on the ship is doing it. So that makes sense. It's an easy identifier. So Bess and George are going to follow August, while Nelda and Nancy are going to be the first ones off the ship so that they can be in a kind of like a hiding place close to where his trunk is going to be for pickup. So the captain contacted the South American government officials, and they said that, yes, some papers had been stolen a while ago and that they suspected an official in the Commerce Department. So that's scary right there, that they have government people on the inside that are giving away documents on these important discoveries. What else could this person be doing?
Like, that's the last thing you want to have happen.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
So apparently the suspect's name is Hans August.
Da, 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 and that's Otto's brother.
Yeah, got to be related to Otto. So it ends up being a much bigger deal than they thought, considering, like we said, these government papers are involved. So they then find out that the woman that they think had planted the diamond bracelet on Nelda earlier back in South Africa at that jewelry store is actually married to Otto. So this is like a total inside job. Everybody's working together. Nancy then updates the girls about what's going on. And of course, they're all amazed that she's, you know, thought of all of this and got it all figured out. And so later on that day, Nancy and Nelda are just kind of hanging out, listening to this orchestra concert, and they see that little boy Bobby from before, and he ends up running into them on a skateboard and knocks them both down.
Like, how does that happen?
Like, I can't imagine that them being knocked over by a kid wouldn't cause some kind of really big commotion where it like stops the music and, you know, people notice them on the ground and help them up. Like, it seems like a mess. But Bobby then says that the funny men made him do it, the ones that speak sign language. So, of course, the light bulb goes off in Nancy's head. And then Bobby runs off, and the girls chase after him because they want him to identify the people that told him to do that. And the girls then take him to the place where Nancy saw the men before, and they happen to be there, which I guess that's one of their meeting places or hangout places. And Bobby confirmed that those were the men, and they gave him a quarter to run into Nancy and Nelda.
Of course.
Of course. This kid is easily bribed. So the girls, you know, throw caution to the wind and go and confront these men. And of course, the men saying that Bobby's lying. Like, of course.
Like, how quickly they got mad. That should have said something about that they're like the bad guys, they're up to something.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, non-guilty people wouldn't be like that. Only guilty people would act like that.
I didn't do it.
Yeah, exactly. And so Bobby gets mad and starts yelling at the men, which is hysterical, and saying, you know, that's not true. You told me to run into them, not to tease them. The men said, no, no, no. We told him just to tease you all. Of course, the girls aren't going to believe that. It's a weak excuse, but okay. So the men take off and the girls look at each other thinking that Bobby was telling the truth. I think he was too, clearly. So the girls decide to go back to the cabin and get ready for the captain's dinner that night. So the boys that they had hung out with earlier left notes for the girls to meet them that evening at the top deck in 10-minute intervals, which seemed really strange.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, just trying to be safe and maybe overly cautious. Nancy and Nelda decided that they were going to go up together because Nancy was supposed to go first and then Nelda was going to follow 10 minutes later. And so they get up to that upper deck and they see these guys dressed as fishermen. And then once they get closer, they realize that these guys aren't the boys from earlier. And the guys throw the girls overboard.
Oh, geez.
And I'm reading this like, they were literally thrown overboard. Like, I don't know how tall this ship is. It's never said.
No.
But, I mean, I assume it's pretty tall. It has multiple decks.
Considering, like, what cruise ships look like now.
They're huge.
Would you think that they were about the same size back in the 1930s?
I wouldn't say the same size. I would think that they were probably smaller. But, I mean, I would assume that they're still big size.
I just want to point out that this is the revised text. So this was, the cruise ship was written in 1976. So it's not that long ago. So I feel like it's probably, like the cruise ship was probably around the same size as cruise ships are now. I don't know. Just throwing that out there.
A fall from that high, hitting water like that, if you don't hit water just the right way, like it's going to hurt.
Yeah.
Like a lot. And we're lucky that you don't hit, like, part of the ship.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's so dangerous.
Or even, like, that they didn't, like, go through, like, the, like, hit something at the bottom of the ship.
Yeah.
Just, like, along this, like, not just, like, the decks, but, like, along the side or, like, the, what's it called? The thing that moves the boat, the motor, something or other.
Propeller?
Yes. That's it. Like, luckily, I mean, they didn't
hit the propeller that's moving. You're going to die. Like,
yeah.
I mean, there's no coming back from that. So, that was really intense. And so as the girls are being thrown overboard, the boys are walking up to the table where Bess and George are sitting. And they were all confused because, yeah, they left notes for the girls, but they all said to meet at 9:45. Not at 10-minute intervals. So the notes were altered. So, of course, they all panic and go to try to find Nancy and Nelda. And they make it up there just as the girls, you know, like I said, were being tossed overboard. And the fishermen that threw them over take off, of course. So George calls for help and they get the ship stopped. Which brings me to another question. It's like, in my head, I imagine trying to stop a big ship like that is like trying to stop a train. It's not instantaneous. Yeah. It takes a while. I mean, I assume you have to drop anchor.
Yeah.
You're still going to go for a while.
So there must have been like so far out.
Yeah, that's all I can think of.
Yeah.
So the captain called George and asked side the girls were thrown overboard, and so a rescue team was launched to find the girls. And Nancy resurfaced but couldn't find Nelda, but turns out Nelda was swimming to the ship, but she couldn't find Nancy. So Nelda ends up getting saved first, but then they quickly find Nancy too, and so both girls are okay, which is good. So Nancy explains what had happened, that they were thrown overboard, that, and then the girls were then taken to the infirmary to get checked out, you know, medically, and they were told to take hot baths and to rest. clearly. I mean, I would need rest after that. Yeah. The captain goes to visit them, and he was very upset about what happened because, I mean, something horrible could have happened to them very easily. And so he told them that he was having a search go on the ship to try to find these fishermen that threw them overboard. And then Nelda ended up falling asleep, but Nancy stayed awake because she still had to meet Rod that night at 2 a.m. so that they could move the trunk. But closer to time, Nelda ended up waking up, and she wanted to leave the infirmary as well. So the girls ended up being released. Of course, Nancy can't take a break ever.
Just take a break, Nancy. Come on.
She can't. She's like one of those types that has a job for like 30 years and then retires, air quotes, and gets another job. She just can't relax. Nancy had a clue that she had wanted to follow up on because she said one of the fishermen was, I got tickled at this too, was wearing wooden Dutch shoes, but they weren't wooden. They were made of leather.
What?
Like, like all I can think of are like those clogs that are like traditional clogs. Like, how do you walk in that? Made of leather.
Like, I'm even looking it up now, and I typed in like in Google wooden Dutch shoes, and they're literally clogs.
Yeah, like why would you wear that if you're dressed up like a fisherman? Fishermen aren't gonna wear shoes like that.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? But okay. So Nancy mentions it to Rod, and he checked with all the stewards who all said that they had never seen shoes like that. But then Rod remembers a crewman having shoes like that. So they go and talk to him, and he said that a passenger wanted to borrow them. So he let them borrow them, but he doesn't know who the person is. I mean, I get you're on a ship and you're not going to go very far, but why would you let some random person use your shoes?
Like, I could understand if it was, like, your friend or, like, a family member.
But not a random person.
Yeah, like, we hear it so much in the books with, like, Nancy, her luggage getting lost, whatever it is. And she has Bess and George with her. They're, like, willingly be like, hey, here, like, take an outfit or two until you get your luggage back.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I could see that. But even, I don't know about you, but I wouldn't want to wear my friend's clothes. Like, no offense to them, but, like, I'd rather have my own stuff. I'm more comfortable that way. Yeah. And, like, everyone's a different size with their clothes, right? So it's not everything's going to fit.
Yeah. And have different tastes, too.
Yeah.
So that was weird, but okay. Yeah. Rod walks Nancy back to her cabin, and he says that he'll be back at 2 a.m. so that they can go ahead and move that trunk. The girls are awake when Nancy and Nelda get there, and they fill them in on everything. And Nancy says, you know, Otto can't be arrested for having the jewels only if he goes through customs without claiming them, which is true. Nancy then remembers that they have to put the lining back in the trunk before they take the trunk out and get it into the hold. So thankfully she remembered that. So they're putting the pieces back in, and then she realized that the side of the trunk has a section of paper that moved really easily. And it was hiding a big diamond and a bag of other jewelry and stones. So thank God they realized that there was another area that had jewels hidden in it. And so George called the captain so that he could come and get the latest find. They're just constantly giving him stuff for his safe. But then the girls decide, you know, just to be sure that we get everything, screw it. Let's just rip all this paper out and make sure we don't miss anything, because it's really not going to matter, because if Otto opens it and says it isn't his because he's seen that it's been tampered with, the argument falls apart because he was still able to open the trunk.
Yeah.
So really, what do they have to lose at this point by ripping the paper up? It's not a big deal. So the captain came and took the jewels, and Rod brought a case for them to keep them safe. And so Nancy finally sleeps for a little bit. Shocking. But before Rod came back to help her move the trunk to the hold, you know, she rested. So they end up, he comes back, they take the trunk. There's no mishaps. Everything goes smoothly for once. And he walks her back to the cabin. So she goes back to bed. And then she wakes up the next morning and they get a phone call from the boys asking how they were doing, you know, after falling overboard, being pushed overboard. So they all decide to have lunch together that day. And then the girls head back to the cabin and Ned calls.
Oh.
Love Ned. And so Ned and Bert and Dave are driving to New York so that they can pick the girls up once they make port. So the girls are packing when Nelda realizes that she can't find this bracelet that she had that was her grandmother's. And so the girls decide to call the infirmary to see if it's there, and it's not. And then Henrik, the stewardess from earlier, knocks on the door and asks if anyone had lost any jewelry. And he had found her bracelet, which was super lucky. The next morning comes around and it's the day that we're going to disembark. And so Nancy and Nelda didn't even have breakfast because they really wanted to be first in line to get off the ship. Understandable. So they eventually get off and they're met by FBI agents who want to question them about a theft. And I'm like, wait a minute. What?
That's weird.
It's real weird. So apparently the Dutch police had informed them that Nelda had smuggled a diamond bracelet into Holland and that Nancy had helped her sell it.
And where did they get this information from?
Otto?
Probably.
Probably. So Nancy explains she didn't even know Nelda until they got on the ship, first of all. And so Nancy goes into this really long-winded story of everything that happened, because at this point, a lot of stuff has happened, clearly. The FBI agents hid with Nancy after she shows them where the trunk is, and they watch for Otto. And he's going through customs. He didn't claim the papers, and he didn't claim the jewels, so now we got him. The customs officers force him to open the trunk, and then he freaks out that it's been tampered with since the lining is torn away. And then his companion, the guy from earlier, sees what's going on and he tries to sneak off, but he was arrested as an accomplice. And Otto ends up putting on one of the costumes that was in the trunk, and Nelda recognizes him as the thief from earlier at the jewelry store in South Africa. The customs agent ends up finding the bracelet that Nelda was accused of stealing hidden under the brass binding of the trunk. So even though the girls ripped all the paper out, there was still stuff hidden in this trunk.
Oh, like they got most of it.
Yeah, almost all of it.
Yeah.
So Rod goes to get the jewels and the papers, and the girls are then free to go. And then Ned and Bert and Dave are there waiting for the girls. And then Nelda says her goodbyes as she has relatives that are waiting to pick her up. And then Nancy figures out that it was Bobby who took off the stickers on the trunk, because if we remember from earlier when this trunk was first described, it didn't have any stickers or identifying information on it. And they figure out that it was Bobby who took the stickers off the trunk since they were so similar, just to be mischievous. And he overhears them talking about it and he said, yeah, it's pretty much exactly what I did.
That kid, man, like,
so
he's just, I mean, got into, you know, everything.
So, yeah, that's pretty much how the story ends. Of course, you know, the bad guys get caught. Nancy and the crew are safe. All is well. They made a new friend from South Africa. So, you know, all in a day's work.
I wonder if they were going to go visit Aunt Eloise in New York afterwards.
That's a good idea. That's a good thought. I don't know. That would be pretty cool. Does she ever show up in a book?
I think she does, or at least she's mentioned in a few. Just don't remember which.
Maybe the files.
Maybe
Nancy Drew files, because I've read some of those books, but it's been a long time, so I can't remember. Actually, now that I say that, I think she might have been mentioned in Stay Tuned for Danger. I think, can't remember off the top of my head. It's been a minute since I've read that one, but yeah, that would be cool if that's what they were gonna do.
Aunt Eloise is actually in a lot of the books. She's in the revised text versions of Nancy's Mysterious Letter and The Message in the Hollow Oak. She's also in The Clue in the Old Album, The Clue of the Leaning Chimney, The Mystery at the Ski Jump, The Ringmaster's Secret, The Mystery of the Fire Dragon, The Clue of the Whistling Bagpipes, The Clue in the Crossword Cipher, and The Secret of Mirror Bay. And then she's mentioned in The Scarlet Slipper Mystery, The Moonstone Castle Mystery, and The 13th Pearl. She's also in 6 of the Digest books, which are still a part of the original series, but they're the paperback ones. And she's mentioned in 3 of them. And then she's also in 6 of the Nancy Drew Files books, and she's mentioned in 3 of those ones as well. And then she's in 1 of the Nancy Drew Notebook books, which is for the little kids.
My next question was, or like kind of the way I was thinking, throughout the book, it seemed like Rod was kind of getting feelings for Nancy. And I was and I was half expecting him to pull a Dave and be like, do you have a steady back home, Nancy?
Well, I mean, he was described as being cute, so... But, of course, you know, we have Ned. Can't forget Ned.
Love Ned.
I know, I do too. Can't help it. He's such a good guy. And yeah. Bert and Dave. Love them too.
I finally realized that, like, with... So there's Nancy and Ned, the double N, and then there's... With Bert is not with Bess. That would if he Bert was with George and yep. Dave is with Bess.
Yep.
I'm like, I have to keep that straight.
I know.
Oh man.
But yeah, that's where the book ends. I really enjoyed this one. I'd never read it before. Thought it was really good. I mean, to me, all of these books, yeah, they're more geared towards the, I think, like 8 to 12-year-old kind of age group. But I mean, to me, they're just so timeless. I love them.
They're so timeless. And yet you're like, okay, let's get on with the other book series, man. And that's like, you know, we'll get there eventually.
Yes, yes we will. We still have, I mean, we've gone through a few books, but we still have our work cut out for us.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it. Do we have any news or anything like that?
Not really, except that we have some very special guests with us next week.
Yes, we do.
Do you remember what we're talking about next week, Candace?
No. This just goes to show all of our listeners that we film stuff out of order. I'm not the one that sets the calendar. That's all you. I just nod and smile and go along with it.
I was like, I kind of made up like the schedule like months ago. And it's like, I just sent it to Candace. I'm like, hey, does this look okay? And she's like, sure.
I'm like, yeah, you just tell me what I need to watch or read or play and what time to be there. And I'll be there. I'll make it happen.
Well, obviously I have to check with you, Candace, to make sure we're all good. And like, you know, if you want to change anything, you just tell me.
I know. I know, but I feel like we've done a really good job sticking with what we've got figured out so far, you know? So why don't you refresh my memory of what we're doing next week?
So next week we are talking about game number 14, Danger by Design.
That's right. I remember now.
And we have not one, but 2 special guests, which yes. You have heard from before on the podcast. I'm not saying who they are. You'll just have to wait.
It's always a good time when they're on, though.
And we will say we've already recorded that episode a while ago now. So, and that was a really fun one.
It was. That was about an hour and a half, wasn't it?
Something like that.
Pretty close to an hour and a half, but it was a really good a good talk, because I feel like around that era of games is where they start getting a little bit more in depth. I feel like the conversations kind of going from there onward are probably going to be longer than, you know, the conversations for like the earlier games.
And I will say one more thing, everyone stay tuned coming up, because we have our interview with Carmen Moore, who plays Hannah Gruen from the 2019 TV show.
Yes, super exciting. She's so sweet, so kind.
Yeah.
So stay tuned for that.
Alrighty. Enjoy the interview, guys, and we'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.
Hello, Carmen, and welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
We are very excited for you to join us today for a little bit of a chat.
Happy to be here.
Listeners, if you recognize that voice, it is Carmen Moore, who plays Hannah Gruen, the keeper of the Horseshoe Bay Historical Society on the show. It's very excited
to have you.
Yes.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Candace, do you want to start us off with asking a question?
Sure. So my questions for you are more general kind of acting questions. I was just kind of curious how you actually got started in acting.
Well, I did it a bit in junior high and high school. And, you know, I was involved in high school musicals and that kind of thing. I had, you know, lofty aspirations of being on Broadway and musicals, but it didn't have a whole lot of guidance when I was younger. I didn't know how to make any of that happen. And, you know, no idea that all those people on Broadway have been singing and dancing and training since they were probably two. So my mother saw an ad in the newspaper when I was about 17 for a theater company in Vancouver called Spirit Song Native Theater Company. And since I didn't grow up in my Indigenous community, she thought it might be a good idea, or, you know, an interesting way for me to sort of get a taste of or learn a little bit more about First Nations culture, tradition, something. You know, my nation is way up north, BC, but I'm currently residing on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, the Tsleil-Waututh, and Squamish peoples. So even just, you know, being around other Indigenous people was a new thing for me. I always kind of felt like an outcast. I didn't feel like I belonged anywhere. So joining that theater company for 9 months and starting there in theater, I had, you know, this idea that I was just going to do theater for the rest of my life. And then I was doing a play in Vancouver, and an agent was in the audience and approached me after and asked me if they could represent me. And I know now, like, I didn't know at the time that that's not usually how the way things work. Usually you have to audition for agents and go seeking them. They don't generally seek you out. So I was like, yeah, sure. I mean, why not? I guess so. And she started sending me out for TV and film auditions, which I had never thought about. And then suddenly I started booking TV and film gigs. And so it kind of just went from there. And, you know, I got pregnant with my son when I was 24 years old, and I realized that, you know, there's no way that I can raise a child and continue doing Vancouver theater, because there's no money in Vancouver theater. So it was, yeah, I kind of had to give up my theater gigs, which I really do miss it. I really love doing theater. So at some point, maybe later in my career, when I'm semi-retired, I'll just go back to doing theater.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, kind of along those lines, do you have any like professional training or anything like that?
No professional training. I've learned everything that I know kind of just by doing. I mean, the program at Spirit Song was technically a theater arts program, but we were all so young and I don't remember a whole lot. To be quite honest, I just remember a lot of drinking. A lot of partying. So I don't even remember what kind of like theater games or anything that we did there. That sounds terrible. But yeah, I dropped out of high school and joined the Spirit Song, and that was, they paid us to be there. Oh, so wow. I guess it was kind of my first job, really. It's just really cool to just show up and hang out with other, you know, aspiring thespians and get a taste of what it's like to be away from home.
Right.
Yeah. And then I just, you know, I was booking local theater gigs and theater with touring companies, like touring schools across Canada and that kind of thing. So I kind of learned by doing that. And then, you know, the first time I landed on a film set, I had no clue what was going on. They had all this set lingo that I didn't understand. And at the time I was still really, really insecure about anybody thinking that I didn't know what I was doing. So I would just pretend that I knew what I was doing.
Fake it and make it.
Right? Exactly. I faked everything my entire life, hoping that nobody would get you know, be any the wiser that I had no clue what was going on. But, you know, I made it this far. I think I'm doing all right.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Alexa, do you have questions?
Mine are more of like the Nancy Drew kind of pathway.
Okay. Well, I'll do my best because the last time I was on set was in November for Nancy Drew. That was my last episode with them. So it was a while ago. I'll see what I can remember.
Okay. Was there, like, throughout your whole time, like, on set with the cast of the show, did you wish that you had, like, more scenes with some of the actors than you did?
Well, I mean, of course, that if this is a cast of, and this does not happen a lot, a cast of really, really amazing, grounded, emotionally evolved people. And there were no egos on that set at all. So, I mean, even just that aspect of it, you know, just wanting to be around really, really good people with good hearts who just made you feel so welcome and loved was a really, really, really nice thing. So it would have been great if Hannah had had a little bit more to do. And I'm glad that they wrote my final episode that way. You know, they really gave Hannah a good storyline to send her off. And it was sad for me that I had to go, but I was doing The Flash and Nancy Drew had to ask them permission quite often to use me. And it was so much with the scheduling that they were like, you know what, we just can't keep asking permission to use you. So we're going to send Hannah off in a really cool way. Yeah.
And like, kind of like going off of that, if, you know, obviously like scheduling is, you know, pretty, it'd probably be pretty crazy, right? Especially if you're doing multiple shows like that, like what you were doing. Would you ever, you know, if the show does continue for more seasons in the future, would you ever want to see Hannah come back to the show?
Absolutely. Yes, without a doubt, I would love to go back. I miss that show a lot and I miss that character. And Kennedy is such a beautiful girl and we got along really, really well. You know, she's very near and dear to me. You know, we still, you know, communicate every once in a while on, you know, social media platform. I'll send her a message once in a while just to say hi. And she's so lovely. The whole cast is that way. They're beautiful. But Kennedy and I kind of had, you know, we had a little connection. Yeah,
you can kind of tell, like, from the social media posts and stuff, that it seems like a really close-knit, tight-knit type of group dynamic.
For sure.
Yeah.
Which is why the show works, right? There's chemistry between all of them, and that becomes very clear on screen. If there's no chemistry between the actors, sometimes you can really tell.
Yeah, no, absolutely, you can. Yeah. That's something that Alexa and I talk about a lot, is that it never feels like anything in the TV show is forced by any means.
No, they love each other so much. Yeah. On and off screen.
So since you kind of told us a little bit of how you got started, and it really was like starting from the bottom and working your way up, do you have any advice for people that are interested in acting in any capacity?
Well, I would say, you know, take as many classes as possible. If anybody claims that they are an agent or a casting director and they're asking you for money, that is a big red flag. If you are seeking out legitimate training and classes and workshops and on-camera study, that kind of thing, and then you're paying for that, that is a really, really good idea. Just get as much experience as you can. Being comfortable in front of a camera and being uncomfortable listening and responding to other actors. I mean, I didn't do a whole lot of that. I obviously learned actually being on the stage. That was my biggest teacher. So I would encourage anybody who wants to get into film and TV work to do as much theater as possible. Theater is where you're going to get good. Theater is where you learn how to act. You know, TV and movies, they might make you, you know, you might get a little bit of fame. You might get a little bit of money in your pocket, a little. Chances are slim. But if you want to be good, do theater.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Alexa and I, like, as consumers of entertainment, we know how COVID kind of changed entertainment. But you as an actor, how did COVID change how you approach like a set.
Well, I think it's more about how the sets approach us. Really, I mean, and the COVID protocols got really intense for a while there. You know, all most productions now are requiring, you know, 2 booster shots, and some of them even want 3 booster shots before you're allowed on set. Mm-hmm. And I think it's more the insurance companies that are saying, we won't insure you unless all of your actors and crew are protected in this way. So, yeah, I mean, we were getting, when I was doing The Flash, I was getting 3 COVID tests a week.
Wow.
Yeah. And I know crew members were doing 1 or 2 tests per week. I know it's cost productions a ton of money just on COVID tests alone.
Mm-hmm.
I know, it's, you know, some productions were, it was costing them up to like $40,000 US a week.
Wow.
Just for COVID tests. For the cast and crew. So, I mean, the last couple of years, I've worked with a lot of people and I have no idea who I've worked with because I've only seen, you know, from their nose up.
Yeah.
I run into people outside of set and they're saying hi to me and I have no idea who they are because I haven't seen anyone's faces, which is kind of sad, you know?
Yeah.
The industry itself had a huge boom, especially in Vancouver for some reason. You know, we all expected everything to get shut down for so long. And yeah, it did initially in the initial lockdowns, we were shut down. But, you know, we came back after the summer in 2020 and we were busier than we'd ever been.
Mm.
Which I don't even understand how that happens, you know, especially because there was so many restrictions about flying back and forth from other outside of the country into Vancouver. So, I mean, it was good for Vancouver actors because, you know, productions did hire Vancouver-based actors a little bit more than they normally do. Mm-hmm. We're so used to losing roles out to LA actors for the bigger roles. So, I mean, there were good things and bad things about the whole thing. And I'm glad, you know, restrictions are starting to be lifted a little bit more now. And we're really looking forward to getting back to some semblance of normal. It'd be really nice to see some faces going to work. Yeah.
Yeah.
Stop getting those Q-tips up my nose.
Yeah, it's so uncomfortable.
It's really not pleasant.
Like throughout the whole, like you're filming on the show and especially in season 3, when you and Alex, who plays Ace, like what was it like filming like the ghostly kinds of things? And especially in the season 3 portion when you were with him, Alex, when you were doing like that in between kind of universe, like what was that kind of like for you?
That was really interesting for me, learning how to like slow things down in real time and trying to make something seem a little not quite real. Alex and I had some fun with it, you know, trying to figure out how to make that look interesting on screen while slowing everything down. Usually in TV, I'm always being told, you got to pick up the pace. We've only got, you know, 29 minutes for this episode, you gotta talk faster, that kind of thing. So this was a whole different feel of just sort of being in this sort of dreamlike state the whole time we were shooting. So it was definitely something new. Yeah, it was fun.
And it's, you know, like always, me and Candace can talk about, you know, kind of like from us as the viewer's point of view watching the show, but it's mm-hmm. kind of neat to hear like you, how like your perspective of it when you were like filming the whole, like the different parts of it, because, you know, we only know the one side of it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, it's cool that like the big sort of party scene that we did, they had these things that they kept putting through the air that they called them cattails for some reason. I don't know what they are, but they were like these little fluffy things that they would do this in front of a fan, and then they would like just float through the air like feathers, and I kept getting distracted by them as we were filming. Like, oh right, I'm supposed to be acting right now. That was a long day. That was a big scene with a lot of people.
So My last kind of question about like the show is out of the Drew crew, so Nancy, Bess, George, Nick, and Ace. Well, actually, reward that. If you had like a mystery to solve and you asked one of the Drew crew, who would you ask to solve it, but you cannot pick Nancy?
Oh, my gosh. Man, who would I ask to solve it? Probably Ace. Okay. And I don't even know why.
It's a good choice.
It is a good choice. I'm trying to figure out why. I don't know why he came to mind, but yeah. I don't know. He just seems so grounded and smart, but also he's really funny. So it would be fun to solve a mystery with him because he'd be cracking me up the whole time.
Right. No, that's a good choice. We just recently rewatched season one, and it seemed like in the beginning of season one, he was underutilized as a character.
So it's nice to see that he had an arc. Yeah. Very talented actor.
Yes, mm-hmm. For sure. I have a question. Do you have anything that you personally like to do before you get on set, before you're ready to be in front of the cameras, any kind of like ritual or anything like that that comes to mind that it's something you have to do before you get started?
As an actor, no. I do have to have my half-calf coffee before I do anything, any day.
Understandable.
I also practice transcendental meditation, so I have to do my meditation every day, or I'm just, like, not quite present. Yeah. Oh, learn my lines.
That probably helps.
Earlier you had mentioned about like your indigenous culture and that kind of thing. We saw in season one with Chief McGinnis, who Adam Beach plays the character, between you and him, I don't really remember seeing much of the indigenous in the Nancy Drew show. Do you hope that there's more, not just in Nancy Drew, but more of in like the film industry of like indigenous people?
It's been a long time coming. You know, there's been a big diversity push in the industry for the last few years, and we're seeing more and more, you know, Black stories and Asian and, you know, Southeast Asian, you know, like just more in general. But there's still a big lack of Indigenous storytelling and Indigenous characters just in regular people roles on most TV shows. I mean, TV and film is still predominantly white. It's getting better, but we've got a long way to go. But I mean, I'm just like looking at shows that are on TV that are doing really, really well right now. Yes, there's diversity in there, but I'm not seeing the Indigenous. I mean, other than, you know, my character on The Flash, I'm so glad that they made her Indigenous and not for any reason other than just, hey, Indigenous people are people too. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's, you know, like even for, especially in today's day and age, right, where it's, you're hearing more of like the people including different backgrounds and cultures, but obviously there needs to be more of it. We need to have like a push for it. Yeah. Obviously, like it is more popular with like the white community and with sprinklings of the other communities, but it's still definitely not so much as the white community as it is.
Yeah. So I really love that, you know, a show like Never Have I Ever. Have you seen this show?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've heard of it, but I haven't watched it.
The three girls on there are South Asian, Asian, and Black, like the three best friends of that show. And, you know, there's a sprinkling of white characters, and, you know, the hot guy is Japanese. So, I mean, that is a show that I'm like, oh my gosh, like finally there's a show out there that isn't predominantly white with a few diverse characters thrown in there for the sake of having diverse characters thrown in there.
Right.
And it's not like they're making a big deal about them. Oh, here's the black person and here's the Asian person. And look how good it's just a show. It could be a cast of white characters, but they decided to go in a different direction. And I think that was Mindy Kaling.
Yeah.
That was spearheading that. So that's probably why. But I would like to see more of that.
Absolutely. Can you tell everybody where we can find you on social media?
Social media. On Instagram, I'm at CarmenMoore1. Same on Twitter. I don't really do anything other than that. I was late to the party, you know. I barely do Instagram. I know everybody else has TikToks and all that. And I'm like, you know, I can't be bothered. Yeah.
It takes a lot of time.
It really does.
Well, Carmen, thank you so much again for coming on with us. It was so nice chatting with you and hearing like your point of view about so many different topics.
Yeah. It was my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you all for listening to this week's episode of River Heights Buzz podcast. You can find us on Instagram at River Heights Buzz. You can email us at riverheightsbuzz@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook and our Facebook group and on Twitter at River Heights Buzz with just one Z. Check us out next week as we discuss Nancy Drew game number 14, Danger by Design.